Hello and welcome to the Barton Legal Podcast. I'm Bill Barton, a solicitor who lives and breathes construction and engineering law. At Barton Legal, we help clients in the UK and around the world on everything from litigation and arbitration to drafting and negotiating contracts. And in this podcast, we unpack the latest legal trends and problems facing the industry, providing you with straight-talking insights to help break down these complex legal questions. So, let's get on with today's episode. Hello, everybody. Today, I'm joined by Matt Malloy and Jonathan Cope, who are both from MCMS Limited. Hello, Jonathan. Hello, Matt. How are you both today?
All very good. Enjoying the summer.
Oh, so you got lots of sunshine where you are.
Absolutely.
Have you? I'm in a different office to Matt today, and we're a bit grey and cloudy today, I would say.
Okay. Well, just to so everyone would be able to place the timing of this, Leeds yesterday managed to hold off from the rain, and England had a magnificent victory against India at Headingley, which just shows why tests should be at Headingley and why you need to come and watch the cricket. I, however, yesterday was doing the Three Peaks walk. It was horrendous. Within 10 minutes, I was soaked. I walked 26 miles with about a pint of water in each boot. It was... Anyway, this isn't about me. I would like each of you... I normally ask people to introduce themselves just in a minute. But actually, as we've got you both here, what I'd like to do, and I should explain to everybody, we don't have preset questions. We have a little chat beforehand. But the conversation you hear is a conversation. And so it's not meant to be prescriptive in any way. So, Jonathan, how about you introduce Matt?
Oh, gosh, okay. Tell us about
Matt, anything you like, in about a minute or so, and then he comes second.
Okay.
So you can go as far as you like, but you just have to remember that he's going to have a comeback.
Yeah, it's like that, getting your two kids. One of them chops the Mars bar in half, and the other chooses which one they're going to take in terms of the size. Well, Matt, I've known Matt for 20-odd years, but Matt is originally a chartered quantity surveyor by background. And he then did some expert work on a large arbitration, got very interested in arbitration. This was sort of mid to late 90s, and went off to do his qualifications at the College of Estate Management. But at the same time, adjudication was just being introduced. And given that he had a bit less grey hair then than he does now, that was probably a good route, a good introduction to tribunal work, adjudication. And obviously, it was skyrocketing at the time. But to enable him to sort of be recognised as a lawyer as well, or certainly in terms of to knowledge of the law when adjudicating, he went off and did the bar course and has been adjudicating since, I think, about the year 2000, something like that. So 25 years. And, well, I think his achievements speak for themselves. And there's such a long list. I can't remember everything. No, that's wrong. But no, Max, undoubtedly, I think one of the most well-respected adjudicators and third-party neutrals in the construction law sector. I've worked with him. Now, I joined MCMS in 2004, so I've worked with him for over 20 years, and he's a great guy to work with, and we work very well. So there you go. There's Matthew.
That was a very, very good and very, very kind, I'd say. So we now have to see.
I went first, you see.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm gonna start a bit earlier than that. When I met Jonathan, which was probably about the early 2000s, but to give a bit of background, so Jonathan is from a family of vicars, and he's the black sheep of the family who went into originally building surveying, but then qualified in quantity surveying as well. So he went off to Reading and did a degree of building surveying and worked for construction company, and then for a firm of chart surveyors. And Jonathan approached me in the early noughties when I was just trying to find my feet in dispute resolution, and expressed an interest in doing what I was doing. And so he was just being offered equity partnership in his firm of chart surveyors, and didn't necessarily want to go down that route. And so we discussed how we might work together. And then, so he came on board in 2004, effectively followed the model that I'd done. So did the law conversion course, talked to the bar. Jonathan's 6 years younger than me. And in terms of how we progressed, it probably was about 5 or 6 years sort of behind in terms of first appointments. But then, yeah, over time, as the sort of learning curve sort of flattens out, I think, you know, we're very much of a parity in terms of, you know, sort of the work and experience that we do. I think one of the key things is that we do things differently, but we have the same principles. And there is a certainly, somebody asked us before, said, well, how does it work? You know, relatively small firm, what really, why does it work? I think there's an element of good luck, but also there's just the trust there. I think that we have the same principles and values. We like doing the doing. So tribunal work can be quite lonely. We've progressed out of expert work. We don't do that ourselves, although as a practice, we're starting to do a little bit more just because we've got some new faces in the firm. But yeah, we very much like doing the work. We're not necessarily about building a business. It's more a case of we want to do the tribunal work. We like the intellectual challenge of deciding or resolving disputes in some way or another. So that's probably, yeah, my take on Jonathan.
Well, I think those really, really good introductions. I note, Matt, that you make two small digs, the fact that Jonathan is younger than you and that he's a bit behind. But I mean, he does appear to have caught up, so we'll give him credit. Jonathan, I hadn't realised you're from family of vicars, and this is maybe completely inappropriate, but I, looking at you on screen, I can imagine you with a
dog collar.
Yes. With a dog collar.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Now I've seen it. it's there. But I should say to anybody who's listening that Jonathan is wearing a resplendent tie, whereas Matt and I had just gone for the quite dull white shirt, no tie, open collar.
Thank you.
But yeah, you are definitely the smartest dressed man in the room.
Thank you. That's, well, I'll take that accolade.
You should. And I have to tell you, I think you are both a couple of the most highly respected people in construction and engineering. The wealth of the articles you've written, publications, your experience, the number of times I see your names appearing on panels and things. And when you talk to people, it's always in the highest regard of other people. And I think that's a lovely thing. And it's great, you know, from my perspective to be able to chat to you, because I think sometimes people think that the law, and I'm talking now everything you do, dispute resolution, let's call it that instead, can be a bit aloof. And I don't think it's like that. I think you're both very personable people. I've spent some time with Jonathan in Lycra. We can talk about that later. There's some, you know, questions you can ask Matt about, you know, what funny things he wears as well. But can we go back a step? How did you actually meet? You know, was it on a job, or, you know, someone introduced you?
Yeah, it was it was through the London Junior Branch of the OICS. So both Matt and I, so in those days, it wasn't called, it's now called RICS Matrix, but in those days, it was a junior branch and every region had their own junior branch. And Matt and I were both on the committee of the London Junior Branch. And we both organised the construction law lectures. So we would have various lawyers, you know, Simon Tolson, people like that, come in, do talks on construction law topics. And that's how we got to know each other, really, from there. But, you know, it just shows you how worthwhile it is to get involved in those sorts of things. You know, whether it's, you know, if you're from a surveying background, but, you know, the Society of Construction Law Adjudication Society, you never know who you're going to meet.
I think that's so true, isn't it? And for lawyers, we've got the Law Society and regional law societies.
Texa.
I think it's quite exciting times in construction dispute resolution, because we'd gone from, you know, it was adjudication as finding its feet, and it had a lower entry level at the beginning compared to now, I suggest. So I was sort of in the early stages, and I think that sort of sparked an interest. And I was, I was a sponge, I was sort of a newly qualified lawyer and really excited about getting gigs as a tribunal. I just loved the cut and thrust, the sort of people that were appearing in front of me at the time, are now sort of Court of Appeal judges, and it's sort of like very much, wow, getting exposure to that at quite a young age was quite exciting. And I think Jonathan, I was very enthusiastic about it. I think Jonathan saw that, and I'm sort of speaking for him, and it just when he said, like, I'd like to do what you do. And we, over a year of meeting, working out how this was going to work, we would meet, have a just chat. And I think actually the first way it worked was I was representing a party in an arbitration, and I instructed Jonathan as an expert whilst he was at his practice.
Yeah.
And that we worked quite closely with each other in that regard. And then that finished, and then Jonathan had sort of, got his ducks in a row in terms of the law conversion course and said, bring some work in, and then off we went. And it was from 2004 to 2009, by the time Jonathan was qualified, then we effectively restructured the business so that Jonathan and I were equal partners going forward. Because for me, it was me, we had Daniel, we had some admin support, but I just wanted to work for myself. And I hadn't really thought about anything beyond the fact that Daniel was working with us, but he was doing more commercial work. The work I was moving away from, he was doing. So these were people who just needed valuations doing or final accounts doing, but I wasn't interested in that. But Daniel was qualifying as a quantity surveyor. And Jonathan then came in, and it was always with an eye to, well, let's see how we go. And if it works and we can work with each other, then who knows? And so in 2009, we restructured and then moved forward as equal partners. And it's been great. It really has. And, it still doesn't feel like a real job. And I say that many times.
Well, I think it's
a real job is working on a construction site when you're arguing with everybody. This is very much, I still get a kick out of it. And
that's
sometimes I like the treadmill to be slowed down, but that's just my own fault.
That's a great accolade to you both to say that you enjoy it. And do you think that the fact that you sort of were having those discussions over the course of a year rather than sort of leaping in, do you think that made a big difference, because it enabled you to realise that you were different, but those differences were beneficial?
I think so. I think it's helpful, and it's about planning, isn't it? And it enabled us to plan what we were going to do. But I think you're right in terms you do recognise those differences. I think we've said, I've certainly said I couldn't work with another me, if you see what I mean, in terms of run a business with another me. And Matt will probably be the same, and we complement each other a bit like a marriage in some respects. How it works. But I think that planning certainly did help. But sorry, mate.
So yeah, and I think that you need to connect right with that with a person. I think the fact that Johnny talks to marriage, it's quite interesting how actually in our private, in our married lives, there is a sort of a similarity in terms of the sort of things that the way we divide our work. There is a sort of similarity, we do things differently, there's a sort of, I think there's a nice balance between the risk and the conservative sort of approach, that we need some, structure and sort of detail and some regimented procedures. And then there's a little bit more, let's go a bit freestyle. So I think it's good. It sort of reins people in.
Yeah.
And
because Matt, you'd had a more, formal upbringing, hadn't you, as a surveyor, because you'd worked for sort of Wilmot Dixon and Hall and Tors, well known historic names, and Jonathan, you came sort of the more modern route through university.
Well, I mean, Matt will explain. I mean, he did also do a quantity surveying degree.
Yeah.
So, in some respects, actually, you could argue it was the other way around, because Matt actually did his OND, wasn't it, Matt, full time? Is that right?
Yeah, no, I left. Yeah, so I left school at 16 and did technical college building studies.
Whereas I left at 16 actually went to work and did my ONC part time, which is one day and one evening a week. It was funny. It was April, must have been April 1993. And one of the lecturers took me aside and said that you really ought to think about going to university. Sadly, I've lost contact with him, but I really want to go back to the college and say thank you so much, because I applied late, got into the University of Reading to do my degree. Yeah, it was wonderful that he sort of just prompted me and pushed me in that direction. But yeah, in some respects, it was quite similar. And then I went back to work for this building contractor during my summers and...
Yeah.
And it was when I left, then I went to private practice, really.
But very, very different back in those days. I mean, I've been doing this a long time as well. So, I mean, I remember the housing grants. I was working, as you probably did, on the DOM form of subcontract. Yeah. And that actually, that's the true birthplace of adjudication. And people forget that adjudication existed under the DOM 2 form before the Act came in. I remember we were doing, my boss at the time was Francis Kirkham. We would do lots of claims. We had, and that was, but it's a very different era, don't you think?
Yeah.
Than to now.
Yeah. My exposure to the dispute world and law was really when I set up MCMS, and it was by accident, because I very much, I was ambitious. So I ended up as a contracts manager for the last 12 months where I worked for a contractor. I ended up working for a social housing contractor, but I was much too young. I was 26. I was made contracts manager, trying to manage, a trades guy who was probably 20, 30 years my senior. It was a challenge. And, I knew my textbooks and I was keen, but I was very much commercial. So, I just wanted to do deals. I didn't want to have a formal, long-winded, formal dispute. I think once I then started MCMS, and it was more a case of just wanting to work, just realise I needed to work for myself. I think my dad was a butcher, a shop owner. So I think I sort of had that in me. I worked with him from a sort of young age on Saturdays, and it was very much that sort of, I like being my boss. Not an empire, but just my dots. And I think once I've worked that out for myself, it was just, I need some money. So I need to sell. I looked at risk. I looked at a number of things. It was, restaurant, bar, building company, circled back to the lowest risk option where we could live on my wife or girlfriend's at times money. And I could just sell my time. So I just started to do that. And just then was an expert on an arbitration. And he said, I need some help for 2 weeks. And I ended up on that case for 12 months. And that was when it sparked the interest, probably just purely commercial. The rates were higher.
Yeah.
But again, I was 20, 27, so young. And then it was a case of, what are you doing here? I want to be an arbitrator, and some really good advice. Say that, don't take it the wrong way, Matt. You're much too young. Nobody's going to appoint you as an arbitrator. You've got time. Do it properly. Get yourself a legal qualification. And that was really well intended. And I said, let me do it. And it was a breath of fresh air. I remember going to law conversion calls. The first time I realized that there was actually women in the industry, because it was we had some...
Oh no! They were hard to spot back then.
So the law conversion course, most of us were from another profession, and it was representative of the population. It was just a fun place to be, and I was a sponge again. It was just like, give me. I just want to learn. I want to develop, and I got used to sort of things taking time to achieve. So it was a nice sort of 5-6 year plan that I could just buy into. And funny enough, we did meet Frank Rayner, who's one of our associates. I met him on the bar, the law conversion course.
Yeah, right.
And we spoke the same language. And then he, after he went off and did his training for disputes, came to us probably about a similar time as John. I forget the date.
About 3 years later.
Yeah. But yeah, but so we sort of developed friendships there. But for me, it was a different time. I was being taught by people who were construction industry arbitrators. They weren't necessarily doing it full time, but there was, you know, an arbitration would drag on for a long time. And there were a few, probably there was a group of about 20 or 30 construction industry arbitrators who were doing bits and pieces, as well as claims consultants, as well as sort of expert work. Knowles were just starting to...
Do you know that was the name that came to front of my mind then? J.R. Knowles.
And I mean, I came in and it was all a bit, I got the impression that there was a little bit of tension. I didn't know the backstory to Knowles, but I got the impression that these people who were part of that Knowles sort of evolution, that the sort of Mark Entwistle, the Paul Jensen, the Jeff Brewers, they were sort of then starting out on their own. And then this adjudication, this kid came in and it was just like, oh, okay, this is quite good. And they were, at the time, people were looking down their noses at adjudication because it was like, wasn't proper dispute resolution and a lot of naysayers. And for me, it was, okay, well, this is the stepping stone to be an arbitrator. And then it took me probably 10 years before I got an arbitration because there wasn't anything really going on.
But you're quite right. Adjudication was seen as the young kid on the block, and it was seen more as a subcontractor form. But it's interesting that you set up your company, you know, on your own so early, because it's, having done it, it's an incredibly difficult step. I mean, I presume your parents were quite supportive.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't, you know, let's say, my dad's an Irish immigrant. Mum's sort of, we very much sort of an Irish Catholic community, second generation Irish sort of. Growing up in London, there wasn't a pot of money to set out. It was more a case of self-made. You know, it was literally my wife who we were getting married in 96. I think we were looking to buy a house. So I thought, well, let's get a mortgage while I'm working for a reputable company. As soon as I get the mortgage offer, I'm going to hand my notice in. And I'm going to start, you know, I walked out the door with 3 weeks work, but then the MD called me in. It said, Matt, we've watched you after about 3 months. I'd like to negotiate 3 consultancy contracts with you. Are you interested in sorting out some final accounts for us? I went, yep, thank you very much. And it was very much, I had a very low target to cover my costs, but I thought we could live where we were with,
it was a very different time. I think some elements of the industry back then, you know, when I was starting, I think the phrase comes to mind, cowboy. I can remember coming across some jobs and the way they were run, and just sort of saying to my bosses, "Is this meant to be like this?" And it was really. And then, you look back to the judges back of that time, you know, Ramsey and Coulson, who came through later. But it was a very, very exciting time in the industry, and the industry was busy, wasn't it? And Jonathan, you were working for a company then, but when you decided, and I think I'd move on to like the requalification, did you feel helped, or did it put you under a bit of pressure knowing that Matt had been down that route? I mean, I think requalification, that is a brilliant way. I'm far more in favour of people doing that actually than people just doing a straight law degree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I started it whilst I was still at my old practice. Now, to them, they didn't do any sort of construction law stuff. That we ran projects. And so if there was a dispute or a, you know, loss and expense claim, extensions of time claim, they would tend to sort of come to me. But otherwise, so for them, it was a bit, we'll support you in this. But, you know, it's not necessarily our core business. And then I'd finished my first year. I went to join MGMS after that. I don't think there was pressure, to be honest with you, Bill. I was pretty confident that I could get through it. I think, but you know, I was in my late 20s. I think by the time you get to that stage, you learn how to pass an exam. and you know, you learn how the best way to revise and that sort of thing is. And I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And but I don't think there was any pressure. Matt was very supportive. You know, I had I took holiday to revise and so on. And you know, you accept that a day of your weekend is going to be devoted to studying. And you know, it's a juggle because you've got to earn fees as well, particularly as you know, people are doing these sorts of qualifications when they're older. I mean, we, you know, the guys that are doing the master's courses and all that sort of thing. It's hard work when you're, you know, you've got a job. Yeah. I mean, luckily I didn't have children at the time, but it's very hard work. And I do feel for those people who are maybe doing it later again and they've got a family and they're trying to do dissertations and sit exams and revise around having, bringing up a family and working full time as well. It's incredibly tough. But luckily, you know, as I say, I didn't have a family at the time, didn't have children at the time, so that made it easy. And I did also have Matt's support there as well.
And you, as Matt said, you get a really good cross section, don't you, of
brilliant.
Of real people. Yeah. And yeah, I'm not slagging off lawyers completely, not my favorite breed of people all the time. But I think it's interesting when you, that requalification course, isn't it? Because you get people who've got real life experience, and you generally are doing that because there's that additional drive. Someone has taken, you've taken that decision, as you both did, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you had an aim and an outcome, and while you're doing that, you didn't feel any time sort of tempted out of your sort of chosen view and thinking, well, do you know, actually I could hack this legal route completely.
Oh, that's a good question, actually. No, I didn't. I mean, there was, I mean, particularly when, you know, you start the bar course and everyone else on there is saying, you know, I want to get a pupillage, I want to practice a barrister. And actually, I'm very similar to Matt. You know, we were doing it for different reasons. We were doing it so we got recognised by the nominating bodies. Is that if someone came to them and said, we want a dual qualified surveyor and lawyer or barrister, then you know, we would be in with the shot of that appointment. That was one. And two, so that parties, if they were going to agree, you all, or even if you were nominated, they'd have some confidence that you understood the legal issues as well. And I think that was very important. By the end of the course, obviously, by the end of the bar course, that's somewhat different. But I think, in terms of, you know, lots of people are all of a sudden realizing that very few are going to get pupillages. And, you know, they were all having a bit of a reset. And, you know, some made it and great stuff. But no, I wasn't tempted. And I think that's also a case of when you've got mortgages to pay and that sort of thing, these going, well, actually, we're going to have to take a step back. And I'm the first to acknowledge, Bill, I probably work better deciding things on paper. You know, I like that time to do that. So the whole advocacy thing of, you know, standing up there and doing advocacy, I enjoyed it on the course and so on. But actually, probably it's not where my strengths lie, if I'm honest. And I think sometimes you've got to be honest about that and say, okay, well, what is my... And I think that sitting down, analysing papers, reading things, identifying issues, working out reasons and so on, it is really possibly a greater strength for me than on my feet having to think and, you know, cross-examine and, you know, change tack and all that sort of thing.
And you, of course, you've both gone on and done lots of further qualifications, you know, Fellows Institute of Arbitrator, and you're, you know, you've both got a list. I mean, cripes, it's like half a page of my A4 research for your various memberships for you both. And that takes a lot of time and upkeep as well. Do you think that's been harder to keep going? Because it's very easy. I suppose what I mean is you can start work, can't you? And you can do a bit. And then you know that you could do with becoming a panel member of this, but that requires work. And I see a lot of people who it sort of tails off, but you two, it hasn't. So I think, Matt, you're also on the FIDIC list. You know, so and that's a huge amount of work. So you've how have you managed to maintain that energy?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think it, ultimately, I think you it takes a certain type of person. I think that's probably we both of us are very goals driven. I think I came from a competitive swimming background, so I was very much the long court and swam at a reasonably high level, about 16 to 22. So, and at that time was while I was qualifying as a QS whilst I was working. Now, swimming was my life. It was, you know, in the pool in the morning and in the pool at night. Work was something I did in the day. I was very impatient. I learned to be patient because I knew it was going to take me 5 years to qualify. So there's no point trying to run before I could walk. So I think I've always had that sort of long-term sort of mindset. And then once I retired from swimming in 92, I met my wife about that time. And I then really threw myself into my career, but very much for a company. But once I got to a certain stage, it was like, yeah, I'm not sure this is, again, the company where I want to continue. So then it was okay. Now I turned myself to work. So it was another goal. The I wasn't sure what, but the legal qualification filled that port. So it was like, okay, let's go there. Everything else, there was motivation to get it done before we'd started a family, and I just wanted to sort of get it done. I think after that, it was a case of continued professional development. The FIDIC thing was probably about the same time, 27, 2018, where I was thinking, yeah, do you know what? Maybe a more international outlook is something that I'm interested in. And so I thought, well, I haven't studied arbitration since 1997. I'll go do a refresher in international commercial arbitration as a chance to do arbitrators. Lo and behold, I get a phone call and I get in the first gig as a presiding arbitrator on an arbitration in Dubai, two silks side by side. And that was the best way of learning how to do international arbitration was to run a two-year arbitration. And then it was like, oh, okay, this is something new. And so I then thought, well, okay, maybe more international facing is something that will give me a reason and a spark to carry on working. And now, and Jonathan will know, is that then led on to other things so I'm now doing legal research in international investment treaty arbitration, Queen Mary. And that is very much it's a 6 years for me to do my research. It suits me because again, I'm a sponge. It's fresh. I don't necessarily want to practice in that area, but I want to master the subject matter. And it gives me it means that when I'm doing the practice, it's not overwhelming. It's still interesting, but it's not all I'm doing. I've got something else. So I think there's an element of it's the type of people that we are, that motivation. I coached swimming as well historically, that sort of giving someone a purpose to get in the pool or to get out on the bike or to go for a run or to come into work. I think is rather than same old, it is for me, it's a case of just, we're here for a set period. So let's enjoy it while we're here.
And do you think it's helped that you both had a mindset of, you're both very driven people and you're both ambitious, but you were also both and are sensible enough to see that you needed a plan. You each had a plan, didn't you, in terms of the time scale it would take you. Do you think that, you know, Jonathan, looking back, do you think that's something that younger people now would benefit from perhaps thinking about the plan, that you can't just go and do something, you know, you have an idea now in,
yep,
and it's June, you're not going to do it by January. It might be something that is a 1 or 2 year,
yep,
plan, and you need to then think about who you know or how you achieve that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two points, really. Is one, yes, have a plan, totally agree, but also recognise that plan might change. When I was deciding to go to university to do a degree in building surveying, my plan was not to be an adjudicator. My plan, I wanted to practice in that field. And I think I was quite lucky. I know people, what's it, that song that says, you know, some of the most interesting people that I know don't know what they want to do in their 40. Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing that sometimes, you know, people pick something and go, right, I'll do that. and it isn't for them. And I certainly found practicing is just as a surveyor, and I'm in no way saying that's not a worthwhile job, because it absolutely is. It wasn't enough of a challenge for me, and I felt, you know, in my sort of mid-20s that you know, it was, I needed something more or different that was going to suit the way I worked and what I enjoyed and the actual challenge, if that makes sense. So I think it's important, Bill, to have a plan, but recognize that it may change. The other thing I would say is, you know, we now see a lot of people who are doing the master's degrees in, you know, King's, Salford, yes, Robert Gordon, those sorts of places, and doing the diplomas in adjudication, and they have a plan. But it's very difficult if they want to practice as a tribunal or, you know, whether that's adjudicator, arbitrator, mediator, expert, determiner, it is difficult getting those appointments. So we've seen people with the best will in the world, they have these plans, but actually really then struggle to get on panels and those sorts of things through no fault of their own. Matt and I, we've got to recognise this element of luck. We got on in some of the early days, and we were very fortunate. Yes, there was still competition. There was still high entry levels. You still have to interview, but at least you got an interview. I do feel for those people, because a lot of them invested a lot of time and a lot of money, and it's quite difficult. I'm not suggesting there's any easier answer, but I think sometimes, yes, you can have that plan, but it not only might it change, but also it might not come off through no fault of your own.
But I think you two were part of the early, you know, carving of a new path. And I agree with you. I don't think it was easier. Look back at the sort of people who were operating then and people that, you know, I was having as appointed and arbitrators. But it's a different sort of thing now. And there are new developments. And I think it's interesting, Matt, you talk about, you know, international treaties, because, you know, international arbitration treaty law is a hugely growing area. And I don't think that construction and engineering has matured to the point where it's static. But people do need to look at new areas, don't they? Because if you're 25, 30, you need to be thinking about what will you be doing in 30 years? What's a new area? And if you can take your skill and experience from construction and engineering and go into a new area, those are opportunities, aren't they?
I mean, I think that's probably the crossover. I think the one thing I've seen now, sort of researching in that area, is that I think it would be a step too far to think that I would necessarily practice in that area, because it's the domain of public international lawyers who practice in that area. However, the crossover benefits in terms of the intellectual rigor, I'm still analysing awards that are published. So the thought process, the drafting, that type of thing crosses over. The academic having to justify it and evidence everything instead of just writing in a match, what I call the match roof style, has really has been an asset. And I think it's crossed over to my construction practice. I think the reality is people expect somebody who is the tribunal in construction or energy related matters to be familiar with the subject matter and be able to interpret and understand the document. So I think there's an element of crossover for me. I mean, by doing the research, I'm now being asked to a module convener on their international construction contracts and international construction arbitration. That happened because my supervisor says, you do construction, don't you? Would you like to be the module convener on the LLM for this project? So it's sort of, okay, and now I'm coordinating and setting exams for a module that half of it's about FIDIC and construction contracts,
You've put yourselves out there, haven't you? You've never, neither of you has ever sort of has sat back. And as I say, I looked through when I was doing my research the number of institutions of which you're members, which is phenomenal. But it's also the fact that you've, on top of work and your learning, you've also given back a huge amount of of your time. I'm not quite sure if you've got one of those sort of time twirlers from, you know, Harry Potter, but you know, Jonathan, you've sat, you were chair of UK Society of Construction, but you've done a lot of things like that as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean,
does that give you a lot of satisfaction?
A great deal, yeah. Absolutely. I think 2 points, Bill, just taking a step back, you're right, we do a lot of that. And that's partly because we get a lot of satisfaction around it and we're very passionate about the subject and those sorts of things. But in addition, that's our marketing, you know, writing the blog. Okay, less so maybe getting involved with organizations, but certainly the blog writing and all of that element of giving back. Because of conflicts, we can't take people out. For obvious reasons, because it creates conflict of interest. So it's not like, you know, the firms and solicitors where, you know, you're getting taken out by experts and vice versa and that sort of thing. We're not doing that. So the time, you know, the time when we write in our blogs is the time when, you know, the other people are sat in the wine bars type scenario, or at the cricket at Headingley and those sorts of things. But no, I mean, that's one aspect to it. But two, no, I think we're both very passionate about the subject areas and getting involved things like the Society of Construction Law. I was chair of the RICS Dispute Resolution Professional Group for a number of years, and we still do a great deal with the RICS as well these days. And it's because we're passionate about the subject, and I think we're always learning. That's a great thing about certain, you know, things like the Society of Construction Law, the Adjudication Society, and so on. It is about learning. You know, that's their focus. They might have some dinners, but ultimately it's about learning about construction law and its sort of associated topics.
They have a lot of younger people coming through. You know, everyone's younger than me. Younger people coming
not
through.
Not fitter though, Bill.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say. We'll come on to that. But they have younger people, and I think that dynamism that brings... is I love going to talks whenever I can, because I'm not saying that I always learn a huge amount, but it's bits you pick up or someone's different view, isn't it? And that's why I like meeting people, sort of as you were saying, Matt, from very different places, might be from their work background or a geographical or whatever, but they approach things in a different way than we have. And it makes you stop and think, oh, hang on. You know, I've always approached it in this direction. But actually, they're coming at it a completely different way. And it suddenly makes you stop and question. And I think that's something that is a really important aspect in what we do.
The one thing I remember was that people were selfless with their time when I was starting out. And I talked about the advice I'd got. And you don't forget that. And now... you know, sadly, some of them are no longer with us, but I made a point over the recent years to make sure I'd say thank you to the people before I can't. And I think there's an element of you remember that. And also, these were the people that were the people who were teaching and lecturing and being taking me as pupil were the people that I looked up to on the pedestal. So there's an element of maybe, you know, ego massaging of saying, well, actually, when I'm doing that, I will be thought of in it. And my daughter will tell you about psychology, but you know, there may be an own psychology behind the satisfaction you get from helping others and whether that's a selfish thing or not. But I think the thing for me is that it's been really rewarding, especially, I mean, involvement with the organizations is one thing, but the pupillage scheme we've introduced to have people shadow us on adjudication, it's just been so rewarding.
I think that's a really good idea,
and it's great because I can now talk to my pupil after the events about the same facts and evidence which I wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And you know, they're sworn in on a confidentiality bubble, but I learned from that.
I think also sort of draw things round. I would say, Matt, that it's clearly I hadn't realised until doing the research about your swimming. And I was very, very interested in that. And also that you've done triathlons. But Jonathan, you also cycle. You both have that ability to go out into a completely different sphere from your work, don't you? Either cycling or swimming. And you're interacting with people from different backgrounds, ages and abilities. And I think those are incredibly important skills, aren't they? It's not a legal skill, is it?
I think the working in my dad's shop in the centre of London before Islington was gentrified was a great learning lesson in how to deal with people. And, you know, most of my dad's customers were either worked at the print, the gin factory, or they were taxi drivers. You know, it was back in the day when everyone bought their food at the end of each day. Didn't really have much of a... They bought a joint at the weekend, but it was... Yeah. They were salt of the earth people. We were living in leafy sort of North London, and I'd be going in there basically having to interact with these people, having to learn that. So I think the people skills are a big thing, and I've often said that, you know, I felt at home coming from the more perhaps that type of background. I feel comfortable, don't necessarily enjoy it, with the earthier side of the industry. I feel like I can communicate. I've got to, every now and then, I had to have a word with myself to realise I've lost touch of reality because you sort of progressed a certain way. But I think that an element of being able to communicate with people is a key skill.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt talked about sort of coming from a church family, and so I think that gives you the opportunity to speak to a whole diverse mix of society. But as does working in construction, because one day you're trying to give instructions to a labourer, and the next day you're speaking to the employer, and so that's really important. And I'm glad you think that, Bill, in terms of we're approachable and personable, and we actually saw that quite a lot with our book that we wrote, because we got lots of people sort of taking them on holiday.
Do plug your book now.
Sorry.
So yeah, plug your book now.
Hold on. We probably both got a copy of Adjudicating Construction Engineering Disputes. Unfortunately, I don't think this is mirrored, but I can assure you, that's what the name of the book is.
A lot of
people took them, you know, we're taking them on holiday and taking photos and putting them on LinkedIn and that sort of thing. Now, I don't think that was, I think that was an element of they possibly liked the book, but I thought it's also an element that they thought we were approachable characters. And so actually they thought, well, it's okay to do that and tag these people in because, you know, they knew we wouldn't have minded. We got one photo, and someone had taken the time to go into Waterstones and put the book in the number one spot on the charts that they have in Waterstones, which was one of my favourites. But no, it was. So I'm glad you picked up on that, Bill. Thank you, and that's very nice of you to say.
Well, you're both very approachable. You're highly regarded. I've been very lucky to spend this morning chatting to you, and I'm very grateful for your time because I know that you have a lot of calls on your time and a whole host of things. Jonathan and Matt from MCMS Limited, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for joining me for today's Barton Legal podcast. Please make sure you follow the show in your podcast app to get new episodes as soon as they're released. We'll be tackling another important topic in this month's Barton Legal webinar, and you can register for free and watch back our previous webinars at bartonlegal.com. Why don't you connect with me on LinkedIn and follow Barton Legal to keep up to date with all the legal trends and news? I look forward to speaking to you again in the next Barton Legal podcast.